this is the laid-back podcast-only version of
I'm going to let my
deep.
Hair down.
Yes, and Chuck had mentioned at the end that, yes, we are planning, and I have a date. Of course, do I have it in front of me?
Oh, no, I do, because you asked me to put it on my calendar. Yes. I actually do.
So we are going to be holding a rural governor's debate in Grand Rapids, Minnesota at the Rife Center. And it is put on by KEXE, and we're working with Lakeland Public Television. It'll be broadcast live on radio stations and TV stations.
August 21st.
Yeah, I was like, it's August something. 21. Yeah.
It's a Tuesday, August 21st, so after the primary.
1 week after the primary, before the state fair. That was what I was trying to work on, and where we could get into the Rife Center, which seats over 600 people. So I'm very excited about this. And you, Aaron, Chuck, and I are the ones who will be asking the questions. We'll also have some things set up for the audience to participate through phones and different sorts of things. But I think it'll be a great way to keep the conversation rural instead of people coming in from outside. I just saw another New York Times article in the last couple of days where they're describing this area, District 8, or this place we live.
Yeah, where they went to Eveleth.
Yeah, it does not have the nuances of what life is actually like in rural areas.
Are you saying that the big media out of New York is not really grasping rural America?
I am saying that. And so that's why we're going to be in control. So how's
that?
Yeah, we are.
Yeah, we're going to.
I think what the national media does with rural Minnesota is they have, or even the state media sometimes, they have an idea what it must be like there, and then they go and find something.
Yeah, they do. They have a real good idea what it's like here.
They find something.
He sounded even more Minnesota.
It's funny because I was in Boston like a couple of weeks ago. I gave a lecture at Harvard. Actually, at the Harvard Law Forum, which I tell you about, is a real rush. They have this video of like all the people who have done this before, and it's like Martin Luther King, and like I'm like, oh my god, and then they're like, and Chuck Marone. So I give this at the end. One of the people came up to me and said, "You don't even sound like a Minnesotan."
Yeah, not enough of an accent.
Yeah.
Someone asked me the question though. I was talking about this governor's debate or forum that we'll be holding. So, what if there are people running? What if Pawlenty doesn't get the endorsement? He has said he's going to stay in the race. So are we including all the people, big people in it? I was assuming it would be probably three people.
When's the primary?
The 14th of August.
Yeah. So it'll be done. The primary.
But we don't necessarily know who those candidates will be.
Right. And so will we, because Mark Dayton was not endorsed by his
right, but
party.
He won the primary.
He won the primary.
Okay.
So it'll be at that point
we will know.
We will have candidates for the two major parties.
Right.
I think the question is, and as someone who has voted Independence Party in the past and has watched that party kind of implode, become like the pot party, basically.
Every answer is industrial hemp.
Yeah, people, we got to, what do we do about medical? Well, we got to legalize marijuana. Well, what do we do about jobs? Well, we got to legalize marijuana. It's like, okay, do we include, a third party in it? And as someone who has voted third party and would love a third party in this state and like welcomes it, I don't see how you can take a third party seriously if they're not at that 5% threshold.
Right. That's the state standard for major party. What they call major party status is you have to win 5% in a statewide election or a certain number of legislative seats or something like that.
And the IP
right
has
now,
lost that.
Right now, we only have two parties that are qualified as major parties, Democratic Farmer Labor and Republican parties. So, that's a tough question for any debate organizer.
I'm glad I'm not the organizer.
Yeah, right.
It's not today's problem. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah. I just get to show up and ask questions.
That's right.
I'm going to ask tough questions, too. I mean, I hope that these guys...
We should fake them out, and you ask the tough liberal questions, and I'll ask the tough conservative questions.
Yes.
But like, fake them out totally.
Here's the thing. Politicians are schooled in not answering questions,
it's ridiculous.
Of course.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think we're going to be able to be in a situation where answer that.
I'm going to yell and pound my fist. You know what's funny is that I was naive, very, very naive when I was younger, and I actually thought that, if I ask an intelligent question, they will answer my question. And I called into public radio once because they had this guy from AARP on. And he was, it was when they were passing Medicare Part D. Mm-hmm. And, they were going to have this huge new entitlement, pay for prescription drugs and all this. And I had a question about the assets of the elderly versus the assets of the young people. Basically, assets of people working versus assets of people who retired. And he, in a very a thing that was incredibly educational for me, he took my question. I got taken off the air, so I couldn't respond or ask a follow-up or anything. He deftly like did a 180 with it and answered a completely different question that sounded kind of like mine, but like really made his point look good. And I realized then that's what political people do.
Yeah.
Like so, that is, well, you don't get to be the guy answering questions on public radio if you're actually going to answer the question, right?
I feel like it's going to be our responsibility at the very least that the audience, either sitting there watching, listening, knows that they're not answering the question. So it's not the same situation where a listener to that segment that you had called into may not realize he didn't answer that question because he was so deft in how right. he turned it around.
Right.
I think we have to at least point that out, if not get the answer out of them. And I saw a debate in February at Hamline University, an environmentally based debate, and they did a thing, and we'll discuss it as we get closer to it, but they had about three questions that they could only answer yes or no to. And they were very strict on it, you know, because they go, well, but the mm-hmm. no, nope, I'm hearing a no. Let's move on to the next person.
I like to have like a horn or a gong. If they get like off topic, I can just, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we'll okay. figure out the format, but I think it'll be a great way for.
We should not. They're going
to. Like the Oscars play the music to get the people to leave the stage. Like have music. Like when you hear the music, you're off.
See, yeah. You know what the problem is now? Is that someone from the campaign is going to listen to this podcast and be like, we're not going to these people.
They've agreed. So far. Okay.
Well, we're still Minnesotans. So there's a limit to the belligerence that
we'll still, feel very sorry. If they look bad, we'll feel sorry about it.
Right.
We'll apologize.
Yeah.
Sorry, I apologize for asking a difficult question.
But I've moderated some debates. I've been a panelist. I've organized debates on a nonpartisan basis and with party stuff. But, as a journalist, I've worked with representing the different viewpoints in an election edition of a newspaper, which is its own highly scrutinized thing that you have to do.
Right.
And I think there's a way to do this that just, you have to just know what the cliches of a debate are. And I think one of the important things for debates to do now is to break those cliches to the degree possible. So you can at least understand whatever the honest disagreements are, whatever the policy disagreements are. So you know what you're voting for, because quite often, typically a candidate is really trained. Like Chuck said, you're trained. I've seen the people being trained. You're trained to answer a question to eliminate or downplay the negatives that will come from your answer. So if you say, if you're for higher taxes to pay for stuff, you would never say you're for higher taxes.
No, you say you're for investment.
You're for investment in these resources and whatever. So because the high tax part is people won't like that. If you're for lower taxes and spending cuts.
Right.
You're going to talk just about the benefit of the tax cuts.
We got to make government more efficient. Yeah. We got to get the money back to the people.
You're not going to talk about which programs you're going to cut and why or any of that. I don't even really want to cut that. It's just the thing I can cut because I can't cut the military. So this is what I'm going to do. So you don't say that, even though that's reality, that's the reality of a political situation. So if you can, the more you can get them, you won't get them all the way honest. You won't get them to be like truth serum. Honest about their positions, which would be beautiful.
Yeah,
if we could just see one debate where everyone's like just says what they really think.
We'll give them water.
I'm very interested about the really starting this election campaign off with something that focuses on small towns and rural areas, not in a pandering way.
Right.
Because what we're gonna get is throughout this is it will quickly devolve into how do we pander to the rural area. And then focus on the war in the suburbs, because the urban area is going to go blue, the rural areas are going to go red. That means what we're going to get is a lot of pandering and a lot of like, oh yeah, we're for you and what we think you want. I would like to actually get to like the meat of things. For instance, I'll give you a question that I would ask Tim Pawlenty or whatever Republican is. Local government aid. Our cities up here are wholly dependent on local government aid. I don't think that's a good thing, but it is a fact. Republicans have been wanting to cut local government aid and have been very like anti this kind of handout. What is your plan for getting cities off of local government aid, getting cities off of this like addiction and dependency to local government aid. What steps would you take to give cities the tools and the things they need to actually stand on their own 2 feet? That's not a, you know, I want to cut government aid or I want to increase government aid question. Like, what are you going to do? Mm-hmm. And, you know, to the Democrat, I would say, what do you think the local implications are of having 3/4 of the budget of Chisholm come from the state? What consequence do you think that there's any negative consequence to that? And that puts them in like some kind of fragile position. Like, is that good for Chisholm? I would be really interested to hear the answer to those questions. So, you know, hopefully we can get into things like that and not just the, you know, we won't do the guns and abortion stuff. Maybe we'll ask a question.
One thing I would, some of the debates I've been a part of, the media does a thing where they're like, we just got this email coming in, which I know they did not just get this email coming in.
Right.
And they use it to talk about the hot button issues. You know, one debate I was involved in, they said, we just got an email, people really concerned about transgender kids in locker rooms.
Right.
Like, no way you just got that, you know?
Right.
And then that.
No, I've got an inbox
gay marriage,
full. It's like 500 emails in my inbox about, No, I know.
So, you know, that kind of trickery we will not do. And now that Chuck has given away at least one of his questions and the parties are listening, they can do their homework.
Well, and you know, maybe my question would be a little easier for them, but I'd like to see, when you talk about rural policy, the DFL, even though they've been losing in rural Minnesota, you know, continues to believe that they have a rural policy. And of course, the Republicans have been winning rural areas despite not having a rural policy, really. I don't think either of them have a great one. But I'd like to know, to whoever the candidates are, what would you as governor do to help rural communities? And what is your vision for how those communities would react to your policies? And how would our communities look if you got your way, basically? And how would it work? Not just like, oh, it'll be perfect, but...
Aaron, I'm going to do what I have to do to create jobs in rural...
Right, right. But I know that that's what they say. Yeah. But how do we get them to talk about how they do it?
I know. And the way I would get to that nuance is say, do you see any distinction between a job as a server at McDonald's or a server at a local restaurant? Like, is there any nuance to you for that? Or is that the same job? Do you see any difference between being a mechanic for a national chain franchise gas station or like the local mechanic working at the local business? Is there any nuance for you, or is that just a job? Because to me, there's a lot of nuance to that. And I would be interested to see if they see any nuance. I doubt that they do.
I doubt that they'd be willing to risk truly answering that question.
Yeah.
Because they might say something that...
Would offend somebody. Donated to them. Right.
Right.
But these are the issues that, you know, I think we struggle with here mm-hmm. in a multidimensional conversation. Yeah.
The debates are like, they're exercises in risk. The candidates go in and they calculate how much they're going to be willing to put out there. If a candidate is down in the polls, for instance, they might be more willing to take a bigger risk. But if a candidate feels he or she is ahead, they take very few risks. And therefore, when you get a question, you're really just playing defense. You don't need to score points. You just need to prevent a disaster.
Right. You saw this not so much in the last presidential election, but in the Romney-Obama one. The very first debate, Obama had prepared, but I think felt fairly confident of his position. Mm-hmm. And Romney came out just like haymaker swinging. And I think the consensus was that Romney like really won
that
debate.
That was a bad debate for Obama.
Right.
That was a bad debate.
And then it kind of switched because the polls tightened and Obama had to actually be a little bit more on the offense as opposed to just like defending turf. So he
when sports analogies, I know everyone loves sports analogies, but like when a good football team loses to a weaker opponent because they didn't play well, they didn't prepare well or whatever, or they came in with a strategy that just wasn't going to work that day, but then they come back in the playoffs and clobber that team.
Right.
The strategy going in is all about assessing your risk and how much you're willing to take. I'd love to say we could get to a system where people take it, just truly answer the questions, but they've learned, and it's true, that truly answering the questions turns off people that they need to vote for them. And maybe not all the people, maybe there's people who would appreciate that honesty anyway. I think Trump won despite offending vast numbers of people.
Yeah, this is a fascinating thing.
He's the most offensive candidate we've had in the country. The only reason we don't know is because we don't. It wasn't written down what those other politicians from 200 years ago said.
It's fascinating. But, yes. Because if you were to just say.
They didn't have Access Hollywood back then.
Here's a candidate who is going to say these things. And here's a candidate whose lifestyle will be this, you know, three wives, paying off prostitutes.
Shock jock radio.
Yeah. Here's, you know, reality TV. Here's this. Don't say a party. Just say, will the Christian conservatives support this candidate? You'd be like, they will burn down this person's house. They will protest to no end. So what you see, and I do think that this is human nature. This is the way we are. What you do is you project onto someone either an optimism or a skepticism based on other things besides what they actually say and believe.
Yeah, attribution is what we call it. If you believe that the person is on your side and is doing what they do for good reasons, one of the ways that a Christian conservative can write off Trump is to say, well, he's reformed.
Right.
You know, or that he's a flawed man and he knows that, right?
This is why, by the way, identity politics works. Mm-hmm. I mean, there've been really good literature on like religions and from an anthropological standpoint, like why do we have religion? And these are from, you know, people who are not necessarily religious. They're studying it from like an anthropological, like we can look at societies all over the world and they all have religion. Why do they all have religion? Even primitive societies have it. Why? And they'll talk about the fact that it is like a binding kind of thing. If you and I both believe in something, and that something is fantastical, like, you know, not believable. And you are someone who doesn't share our beliefs. Let me make this very concrete. You and I believe in our God was born of a virgin. And you look at that and you're like, that's the most absurd thing I've ever heard. Like, that's like physically not possible. That did not happen. I don't have to know anything else about Aaron, except that him and I go to the same church, kneel in the same place, and have the same fundamental belief of which you attack and find to be ridiculous. And I will feel bonded to Aaron, regardless of what else Aaron does or says or believes. And I will be more apt to trust Aaron. I will be more apt to find kindred in him. Yeah. I will be more
even
apt
if I'm
to,
running a money game on the side.
Even if he's like cheating me blind, I will be more likely to find than you. And it's simply because we share that belief. That is, you know, a lot of politics is finding ways to connect with people to where they will overlook the other things about you that, you know, they don't find agreeable. I think the Trump phenomenon can be simplified down to that. Mm-hmm. I said before, like, I did not vote for Trump, but I said that, like, I heard the siren, like I heard the whistle. Like, you know, I was drawn to it. Like, I had to be tied to the mast like a Homer, you know, to not be seduced by this. In a sense, like when he says drain the swamp, when he says make America great, when he says like Hillary's crooked, like all those things really play to something base inside of me that I just believed. And it's very hard to resist that call. And I think, you know, we can respect that in other people, that is like a very real yet irrational thing that we all have inside of us.
And I think the theme for our this month's chat was beware the white knight.
Yeah.
And I think politics is really boiling down to separate of the party labels and I'm sorry, liberal or conservative politics. We don't see either of those ideologies in any kind of pure form right now. But what we do see is a clash between those with an authoritarian bent who wish that things were smooth and efficient and run smoothly by somebody in charge, and those with a collectivist bent that are like, all of us together, all of us equal, you know, let's essentially group hug our way through this problem. And those are just, they cannot be reconciled.
Right.
They cannot be reconciled. And that's really, I think, the struggle. We're increasingly the world, by virtue of the strength and power of more collectivist nations in other parts of the world, is becoming more collectivist. It by the numbers, it is a collectivist world, and we are in a very individualistic country that is now becoming more authoritarian. And that's, you know, for a free speech, democracy, constitution guy, a small L liberal, that is scary. Yeah. And so we'll see how it goes.
Well, I have another, this is our podcast only, I could be more casual. I have an interview I have to do with a politician up in like 20 minutes here.
Right.
Oh, but I do want to, you guys don't have to say this, but who do you think is going to be there at that forum debate?
At what's the forum? Guess?
Yeah. Oh. Who's gonna win the primaries?
I have no idea on the DFL side. Okay. I really don't. It's hard for me to believe that if Pawlenty wants the nomination that he would not get it. I mean, I think he has the name recognition, and you know, I did not vote for him the first time around. He ran against Tim Penny, and I know Tim Penny personally and thought he would be a great governor. But I did vote for him the second time because I thought he did a good job. I thought Pawlenty did a good job until he decided he could be president. Then he became like a horrible governor.
I think Pawlenty is favored on the Republican side, Jeff Johnson appears to be the alternative to Pawlenty. And if he does get the endorsement, and if there is an anti-establishment Trumpian wave in the Republican Party that doesn't like Pawlenty, if they decide he's no good, it could get closer, interesting. But I think he's just got too much money. And then on the Democratic side, probably Tim Walz, though if it's not Tim Walz,
that's very interesting.
If it's not Tim Walz,
do you think the deep Twin Cities will vote for Tim Walz?
I think he's working very hard to see that they do.
Okay.
And I think in a primary and in a convention that's coming up in later this summer,
it would be a pragmatic selection from a group of people that are not known as being pragmatic.
Right. And alternatively, it would be Otto, Rebecca Otto, state auditor, who would be more to the left, and she believes she matches up well against Pawlenty, but that'd be an interesting race.
It would be interesting. Are they all skipping the endorsement?
Walz is.
That's probably his best.
Yeah, probably, I think.
His only path.
And then it's Otto or Aaron Murphy on the Democrat for the endorsement. And there's a chance for either of them, but I still think it's probably Tim Walz.
Okay. Good to know. This is Dig Deep. Send us your thoughts, comments at kaxe.org.